Welcome to Take Note on WBSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Montana State University professor Florence Dunkel has been an entomologist for nearly 50 years, but it wasn't until a trip to Rwanda in 1985 that she began studying insects for their nutritional value. Now one of the world's leading entomophagists, she warns against unsustainable food practices and the detrimental effects of Western cultural bias. And she champions the low-cost, high-protein benefits of eating insects. Florence Dunkel, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Patty. Thanks for having me.
As I said, you've been an entomologist for nearly 50 years, but you didn't start eating insects or promoting their value as a food source until much later. Tell us about this 1985 trip to Rwanda.
Well, I was directing a USAID project there, and we were out in the field coming back. It was about 7, 8 o'clock at night, already dark because it's near the equator. And we noticed children darting out into traffic under the streetlights with little plastic bags, didn't understand what they were. And so we stopped and asked, and they were red locusts. It was a locust plague, which is an explosion of locusts, high population, and they were selling them. And so I bought a bag because I had eaten grasshoppers before with my students and in a pond study class, pond ecology, and they tasted okay. They were canned. So I brought them back. I was staying at the Meridian, and there was a French chef, and I was a common visitor there. And so he said, fine, I'll cook them up for you, as if he knew exactly what to do, brought me this beautiful plate sautéed in butter.
Filled with locusts.
And of course, they're red locusts, but when they're fried, and they're like a lobster. So the exoskeleton is red, and they look beautiful, but they tasted delicious. They tasted like soft-shelled crab, and I love soft-shelled crab. And so that was my start. The next opportunity I had was to actually serve them to my students. I took the department headship up at Montana State University, assigned to myself a course in insects and human society. And so the first meeting, I fried up some insects the first semester.
What's the reaction among students? And do you tell them before or after they've had their meal that they've just consumed insects? Or is it pretty obvious?
Yeah, I have to tell them before because there is an allergy reaction. If you're allergic to shellfish like crab, lobster, shrimp, then the likelihood is that you'll be allergic to insects. So I make sure, and I have never had a problem with this, make sure they've had shrimp and had a good experience with it, or lobster.
Give us an idea of just how many insects are considered edible.
Right now, the number is at 2,000, and this grows all the time. Every year, we're discovering more that are used by someone, some cultural group somewhere in the world.
Well, that brings me to this. Eating insects is nothing new, but the word for it that we're using here in the United States, entomophagy, that is a new word.
Well, yeah, it's been around for a while, but it has some sort of odd overtones. And so what I've been doing is simply talking about the cousins. These are cousins of the shrimp, and they live mainly on land and not in the ocean.
So, Galleria, you're referring to the land shrimp?
Right. So I just call all edible insects land shrimp, and it makes a familiar sound for people. Shrimp is something usually associated with good times and good taste. And so I just say, well, you like ocean shrimp, then you'll really like land shrimp. You just put a little extra sea salt on them, and same thing.
You recently gave a really powerful talk for Bozeman's version of the wildly popular TEDx series, extolling the benefits of eating insects. And I think a lot of people listening right now are saying, well, why eat bugs?
Well, first of all, they're good for you. We all are concerned about omega-3 fatty acids ratio with omega-6 for good brain function. Insects have an excellent ratio. They're very high in omega-3s. The other thing that I pay a lot of attention to is protein content. They're just as good as 100 grams of insects is just as good as 100 grams of beef. But then you get the extra nutrients of very high amounts, 30 times more calcium, 10 times more iron. And more thiamine, riboflavin, zinc is another one. But you have to be careful. Different insects have different nutrient contents. So it really varies. It's like having a specialized vitamin pill.
You say you have to be careful, and that brings me to this idea, and you already talked about allergies. There are other safety concerns when we talk about eating insects, especially wild insects. So you need to know where your insect is coming from.
Yes, you need to know. So it hasn't been exposed to some kind of pesticides or other toxins, or even has something physical about it that would cause it to be not a good thing to eat.
For instance?
For instance, there are dermestid larvae. Those are like, we call them black carpet beetles and things like that. Some of those relatives of the dermestids have what are called haucidae that are like recurved fish hooks. And getting those stuck in your throat is not a good idea. Those are not edible insects. Another one is the larvae of the monarch butterfly. It's beautiful, but it's a signal in its beauty that it has something not good. It has cardioglycosides, which are emetics, cause you to throw up. And
You have been sauteing and broiling and roasting and baking and making recipes with grasshoppers for 27 years. First of all, describe the versatility of something like a grasshopper. And is it an acquired taste?
Well, because I discovered early on in 1985 that the taste is so similar to a soft-shell crab that I had already acquired the taste, and many people have acquired it. It's delicious. But each insect has its own specific taste. Some insects have no taste at all that I can discover, just a texture like Galeria, the wax moth larvae. They have no taste. They're kind of like a mushroom. You can put them with anything, and it becomes whatever the spices are that you put with it.
Speaking of taste, the advisor for insects or food says the giant water bug tastes like, and I'm quoting here, a salty, fruity, flowery Jolly Rancher.
Wow. I've never had them. But my experience with grasshoppers and locusts would corroborate that. I have also had some time with one of the experimental chefs at the restaurant Noma, which is a pace-setting restaurant in the world located in Copenhagen. And he runs the Nordic Food Lab and has gone to taste freshly cooked insects all around the world. He says sometimes they taste like mangoes. And they're wonderful. It's a whole taste experience that we're yet to discover, I think, as humans.
Although that's not entirely true. I mean, in the United States, we're not experimenting very much, but you actually held the first international conference on insects to feed the world in the Netherlands. 450 people from 50 countries attended. And one of the things you did, of course, was talk about how you can prepare these and make them more palatable for Westerners who are a little queasy about it.
In different ways, yes. And one thing that has happened even since that conference is in the United States, several entrepreneurs have begun to create flour out of crickets, which are house crickets, which are very easy to raise. The genus name for house crickets is Akita, and some of them call their flour Akita flour. It sounds wonderful. And indeed, we've been using it at Montana State at MSU Catering Service. They've been making smoothies and cookies.
You make Toll Hell's cookies with,
right,
with cricket
gluten-free
flour.
Gluten-free cookies. And it has lots of potential. There's another company coming out of Salt Lake City that makes their own flour from the same insect, and they make cricket bars, and those are delicious. It's a very, very useful product.
Does changing the name help make it more palatable? Because there is that yuck factor, which I don't entirely understand. Mm-hmm. If you think about lobsters, which we present to consumers whole on the plate with eyes, antenna, everything attached, and we don't think anything of it, but serve a cricket or a worm and the aversion is over the top.
This is a very complex thing. The disgust factor is academically what we call the yuck factor. And think of lobster itself. Lobster used to be something that we would feed prisoners. It was a not Nice.
Because it's a bottom feeder.
It is a bottom feeder, and you don't know what you don't want to know what lobsters eat. But now somehow it's moved into the very elite, elegant, high-priced eating milieu. Insects may do the same. Think of sushi and its history.
Or escargot.
Yes. Think of pizza. I remember when you couldn't buy pizza in a restaurant. And now it's used in many ways. This same thing is going to be happening with insects, and it's going to go in several ways. People are going to be eating whole insects in sushi. I've actually had them in a restaurant in Portland, Oregon, in sushi, but they were cooked. But I also had them in many flowered products. And I myself have experimented with many, many recipes over these past 28 years.
Mm-hmm. You're especially concerned about this and extolling the virtues of eating insects because of what's happening demographically. By 2050, there will be 9 billion, with a B, people on this planet.
Right. And there are right now 2 billion, with a B, people eating insects normally, routinely, by choice. And I think that we also have made many calculations about the number of people right now who are in, it's called faltering growth, or in a undernutrition state. If we just took the technology we have now and used that to produce insect protein, all of those people could receive an adequate amount of protein daily, year in and year out.
You've shared a story that's so disturbing. It's about how well-meaning Western scientists went to Mali in West Africa and told children who were eating grasshoppers, grasshoppers are not a food. What were the consequences of that?
Mm-hmm. It really makes me sad to even think about that. It was a slow discovery. I lived in a village where I could watch what the children were eating and knew their history and how they loved grasshoppers. There was a whole culture built around the little boys would go out and search for the grasshoppers and come back, borrow their dad's charcoal burner for tea, and roast them on skewers and share them with the girls and all the younger children. It was a very social occasion, but their moms and grandmas said, no longer do we want you to do this, because the fields where you hunt are now being used for cotton raising, and cotton has many dangerous pesticides. That was one thing. And then the other emphasis is this adoption of the Western diet and the idea that we want to eat like the Westerners do and be like them. And their observation was that Westerners don't eat insects and really consider them disgusting. And
was it just an observation, or were Western scientists saying not to eat insects? A combination?
I think it was a combination, but mainly observation. And when the reverse was interesting, when they found out in this village, who we had established a long, trusting relationship with, that actually we did cook insects a lot, and we ate them in the United States.
Native Americans did.
And Native Americans, but I did too, with my students and other faculty. And suddenly there were stories about not just the grasshopper snack food for the kids, but the adults were saying, yes, oh, we eat this larva, or we have this other insect. I've kind of forgotten the name, they would say, but their memory would slowly return that, yes, there were many edible insects.
But the result of eliminating these from their diet resulted in malnutrition and, in fact, death in some areas.
Well, yes, you can look at the numbers of what kinds of amino acids. Okay, the diet in West Africa is grain-based, and so they're missing some of the essential amino acids for growth that are needed for proteins, both for cognitive development, for their minds, and for their bodies, their muscle, their bones. And you know that they're on the edge already with their grain-based diet. If you take away insects, you can do the calculations. They're going to be more than at risk. They're going to have kwashiorkor if they spiral.
Kwashiorkor, which is a disease associated with a lack of protein.
Yes, right. And it's basically caused by a lack of one or more of the essential amino acids. And if they spiral down, the result is death.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Our guest is Dr. Florence Dunkel, an associate professor of entomology at Montana State University. Dunkel has spent years studying bugs and also serving them to her students. As editor of the International Food Insects newsletter, she's been extolling the virtues of feeding insects to humans and other animals. There are issues, ethical issues, around the humane raising of cattle and other meat products. What are the ethical issues around insect farming, or are there any?
Well, there is beginning to be an ethical issue of how do you humanely kill an insect. And simply, we use cold. We use a freezing temperature, and that works well. It's a normal thing. This is normally what happens to a grasshopper. The female lays her eggs, the males and females die, and they die during the coming of the cold, freezing temperatures. That's it.
So if you were to purchase a bag of grasshoppers or crickets, you would freeze them and then cook them? Because in some of the dishes you prepared, they were still live insects dropped into a frying pan, for example.
Mealworms do well. You can fry them live like you would boil a lobster or a shrimp. But you can also freeze mealworms. I like to know that they're fresh and sound and a healthy thing to eat. However, with grasshoppers, the only place I know they're being marketed frozen are in the Netherlands. But that's the way I would prefer to receive them. In the United States, not yet can we get frozen grasshoppers, but this is coming. I can hear the questions that come to me, and I know there's going to be some grasshopper farms developing. Drying grasshoppers is another way.
You talked earlier about, you sort of compared eating insects to eating cows, and I'm wondering in terms of greenhouse gases and in terms of farming or animal husbandry, how that compares with raising insects.
Yeah, comparisons are outstanding. They're amazing. Just with greenhouse gases, we understand from data from a couple of years ago that 20% of the greenhouse gases are actually produced by livestock. That's large livestock.
Cows and pigs.
Cows and pigs and sheep and so forth. Mini livestock, which is what insects are called, produce a tiny, tiny fraction of that. It's amazing. But the other benefits, like the use of land, insects don't require land to grow.
In fact, they can be raised vertically rather than horizontally, I understand.
Vertically on rooftops, or you can have a small container on your kitchen cupboard for your own personal use. Water is another major, major issue. 1 gallon in to an insect colony gives you 1 pound of protein, edible protein, but you have to have 100 or more gallons of water to produce the same.
A pound of beef,
pound
for
of
example.
Beef, yeah. And pound per pound of feed in and feed out. So the amount of feed that you give an insect will produce, let's say, a pound of edible product, actually 12 times the amount of food, edible material, you give a cow to get 1 pound. So
the ratio is 12 to 1.
Yes, it is.
As I said earlier, for 27 years now, you've been cooking with insects. What insects do you eat, and what foods have they replaced in your diet?
Okay, the most common ones, of course, are house crickets and wax moth larvae and mealworms that can be purchased commercially. The ones that I really, really like to eat, though, are grasshoppers collected from my own organic garden. And one of my favorite dishes is simply a spinach strawberry salad with sautéed grasshopper topping. And you can collect everything all in one place in the same garden. It's very nice. One of my other favorites, though, is bee brood, which is bee pupae and bee larvae and scrambled over on a cracker for breakfast. It's delicious.
I'm kind of curious what parts of the grasshopper you don't eat, and I ask that because I've read that 44% of cows are edible and 95% of insects are edible.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can eat most all of the insect. With grasshoppers, I sincerely want everyone to take off the legs. They have spurs on them, and they are harmful. So I take off the legs. Everything else you can eat.
And some insects, we should probably caution, are toxic.
Yes. The rule is that if insects are eaten by a group of people in the world, if they're already on the list of edible insects, it's okay. But don't experiment. Don't eat insects raw, just to be absolutely sure.
Insects like teeming, and they thrive in crowded conditions. And I think that's part of the reason that many people have a psychological aversion mm-hmm. to eating them. They think of insects and they think dirty, filthy. How do you overcome that? And is that a correct observation?
Yes, you can grow many in a small area, and they like being together. But I think they're very clean. They're much cleaner than a cow, pig, or sheep, probably, in crowded conditions. They do much better. They're used to it. I think one thing that should be talked about at this time is the microbial picture. There are many microbes, many bacteria, fungi, mainly bacteria, that we share with cows, pigs, particularly pigs.
So genetically, we're not that different from them.
No. And so microorganisms that they harbor can cause them problems, but they also cause us problems. Microorganisms that attack insects, nematodes and bacteria and fungi, are not. They're called entomopathogenic microorganisms. They only attack insects. Not vertebrates, so not fish, or mammals. And so the safety precautions for insects are much, much better.
So, for example, we worry about swine flu.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to worry about those sorts of things if we're eating insects.
No. Mm-mm.
It's considered abhorrent, even outlawed in India, for example, to eat cows. And it's normal for most Americans. On the other hand, Americans find it abhorrent to eat dogs or cats or monkeys, but all three are eaten in different parts of the globe. So I'm wondering what it's going to take to make eating insects palatable mm-hmm. to Americans.
Okay. Well, I've been working on that very thing for about 27 years. And one thing I've found that really helps for the older generation, the younger generations get it right away. They look at the environmental issues. They look at the personal nutrition issues. And it's fine. But older people in policymaking areas have grown up in a different way. And so it has to be approached very gently and very carefully. One thing I ask often is, do you enjoy figs? Did you grow up eating Fig Newtons? And often people will say, yes, I do. And then I ask them whether they liked the figs or liked the Fig Newtons. And if they say yes, well, then I say, then you do like edible insects. Because in order to be a fig, you have to have trapped the insect called the fig wasps and all their parasitoids, which are also wasps, inside the fig. So you're eating insects all the time when you eat figs, and they're delicious, right?
And consider the fact that honey is bee vomit.
Yes, right.
We don't think of those things, though. So we eat such a sanitized mm-hmm. diet that we mm-hmm. often don't even recognize mm-hmm. its source.
Mm-hmm. But with honey, the thing that I've discovered happens is there's a song about it. You have to be carefully taught before you are 6 or 7 or 8 to hate the things your relatives hate. And that's the way honey is. Honey is introduced to us as something sweet and wonderful, and we're not told what it is. We're not told it's yucky and disgusting. And that stays in our mind as grown-ups. And I've never had a student say to me, I'm not going to eat honey anymore, after I tell them exactly how it's produced.
Are insects kosher? And are they, can vegetarians eat them?
Okay, it's really up to the vegetarian. But the issue of kosher is very exact and precise. And in the document that determines whether it's kosher or not, the category is whether it hops and doesn't spend a lot of time on the ground. And so grasshoppers and locusts are kosher by definition, and others that hop, the crickets and so forth. And I would imagine katydids and maybe dragonflies and so forth. And then there's the halal, the Islamic code of what you can eat and what you can't, and it's very much the same.
There's growing concern about the sustainability of our food practices, especially if we talk about the irreplaceable harvest of food from the ocean. In 2003, I interviewed the author of the book, The Empty Ocean. And, you know, he predicted the plunder and the depletion of our oceans, and it appears to be coming true. To what extent is eating insects a way to feed the planet and get around what we're doing environmentally to the ocean and to the environment?
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, insects are not normally found in the ocean, but we found that when we farm fish, in fact, right now, fish farming uses ocean fish and other material from the ocean that we don't use as humans, but it's still taking material from the oceans. Those farm fish love insects. Farm fish can exist very well on farmed insects. In fact, there's a nice system that you can develop.
And almost. You're encouraging this.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. And a similar system exists with chickens. Chickens prefer insects. They feed better. They grow better, taste better with insects. So, yeah, there's many closed systems that can work really well. Insects also are good waste management material. So in abattoirs or places where there's a lot of mammals being slaughtered, they can create protein for chickens by using the waste from the slaughterhouse. So they need to be appreciated part of the cycle.
What do insects eat?
Oh, okay. Well, insects will first of all choose the most nutritious food that's available to them. They will pick the best grain, the variety of grain that has the best nutrients for us as well as for them. They eat lots of different things. Yeah, vegetation. They eat other insects.
And how much interest is there in the United States? I know there's interest in the Netherlands and in other places where chefs are actually figuring out ways to present dishes made of insects that are palatable and beautiful and very good tasting.
Mm-hmm. There are movements here in the United States. There's restaurants in Portland, Oregon, Orange County, California, New York, and Washington, D.C. But I think what I see expanding fastest in the United States are the energy bars, energy drinks, the protein flour, which is made into other things. And it's growing. It's growing very fast in the United States. This is an entrepreneurial sector that is in logarithmic growth right now.
You've had a really interesting career, and I'm just wondering where you're investing your energies these days.
I'm investing it in helping people understand the importance to our world in issues of food security, in issues of feeding the 9 billion people that we're expecting, and helping people enjoy this protein source, but helping them get over the disgust factor. This is very important for all of us to live together in the world.
All right. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you. Bon appetit.
That was Dr. Florence Dunkel. She's an associate professor of entomology at Montana State University. Dunkel works to spread awareness of the current depletion of our land's resources, the irreplaceable harvest of food from the ocean, and how incorporating insects into our diet can help reverse these dire trends. To hear more of this interview, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.